Hey everyone, welcome back again to another exciting episode of the Iconist Podcast. As usual, I'm one of your co-hosts for this show, and it's Barry 3D. Hey. And on my side, as always, the man, the myth, the legend. If you're dancing, then he's playing, right? Who am I talking about? The one and only
DJ Rod C. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to another episode. We got something for you.
Absolutely. Before we get into all of that, you know the deal. Manners maketh the man. We got to go down the round table. So let's get down to it. Get on down. He's like, get down on it. Dun, dun, dun. Get down on it. Okay, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm good.
You're all right?
I'm all right. Okay, cool. So first and foremost, remember, this is the Iconist Podcast. Thank you. Remember, like, subscribe, and share. Don't let the show be a secret. If you want to find thing that I'm doing, because on top of this show I do stand-up comedy, you can go to my website. That is barry3d.com. you can find where I'm going to be at, promote, support me live, support the show. Anything is appreciated. Thank you very much. Also, I'm doing shows with another group of guys, as you know. That's A Touch of Gray Matter, which is myself, Dave Sekulowski, and Zolfal Lee. Come and check us out when we get some live shows going. We got some things in the works, so hopefully sooner than later we'll see you out there. And, of course, I got a show out in Cambridge. So for any of our fans or friends out in Cambridge, please come out, support the show. You'll see myself with Thomas Patrice and Quincy Martin. You know, it's a show at 6 o'clock. It's a Saturday. It's March 10th. There we go. Please, show out. Let's show out. It's good. It's going to be Hilton's B-Day Bash, Comedy Bash. There we go. See the poster. On top of that, we're also part of the Subculture Podcast Network. Take for a listen. Check out the other shows that are on that network channel. It's us plus five other shows. All go to, you know, nerd culture 100%. And of course, since we talk about comics and want us to maybe start a comic book collection, please go and check out our friends out in Kitchener and tell Wes and the guys that we said hi over at Wild Comics. For the fans and friends over in Cambridge, go and check out A Hero's Tale. Tell Andrew and the guys we said hi. And for our friends and friends in Montreal, please reach out to Tech Swings. Tell Trevor and the rest of the guys we said hello.
Nice.
Right? You know, gotta do it. Rod, my man.
Sir.
Where can we find
you? As I always say, you can find me on the World Wide Web. You can find me on Instagram and Mr. Rod C. You can have that access to me. You can, you know, find me all over. You can also find me on the world of Twitch, twitch.tv at DJ Rod C. But you know what? If you're not familiar with that one, that's okay. I know you're familiar with the TikTok. You can find me on the TikTok at TikTok.com/DJ Rod C1. That's DJ Rod C1. Okay then.
All right, now you know.
Now you know, those half the battle.
Of course. And another friend of the show, Mr. Larry Reclusado. You can check out his page, Forgotten, Obscure, and Underrated Heroes. It's a Facebook page. You got to make sure, answer the questions, be polite. It's all about a great, fun chat. So definitely check us out. We're on there too. You'll see us commenting and posting our stuff as there as reminders. And we're also on Podbean. That's what we use for our pod. So we're on YouTube and we're on Podbean. So if you want to check it out, you too can start a podcast and get your voice out there with the thousands of others. And you just go to podbean.com. You'll find us at iconis.podbean.com. All right. And on that note, last but not least, if you're looking to start your own podcast, your own show, or anything you got going on, and you need a graphic artist worldwide, there's only one and one man that you should be going to, and that is
J Bird Digital Art.
Mr. Jason Reese, J Bird Digital Arts. You hook him up. Tell him you heard about him on the Iconist Podcast, and he'll give you a discount on the work. Yeah, I know I can't sing, but I'm singing anyways. Why? Because we have a podcast, and we can do whatever we want. Hello.
Hello.
Do what you like. Okay. Okay. Brings us down to today's episode on the Iconist Podcast. The icon is
Madam Web.
Wow. Now we had to do this character because one, it's a character we wanted to do for a while. Two, the movie came out And we've seen other people talking about it. I'm like, hey, this is something we wanted to do. And here we are, wanting to be first on it, but now we're kind of last to it. So we're getting to it right now. Because why? Because we've got a podcast. And this is what you all tune in to find out. So we are going to be talking about Madame Web, and we're going to be talking about the comic book origins, the comic book story trajectory of Madame Web. Yep. Maybe touch on a movie, for what I know, because I'll be honest, I haven't seen it yet. But, we'll go with what we think it should have been and how it could have been a bigger player than maybe what it's done. All right. So first and foremost, Madame Web. This character made her debut in The Amazing Spider-Man issue number 210 back in November of 1980. What? And she didn't have shoulder pads? Yeah. Lot of mercy. Ladies were kicking. The character was created by Danny O'Neill and John Romita Jr. Wow. Yes, that John Romita Jr. Okay. Danny O'Neill. Okay. I see that. And when she came about, her name was Cassandra Webb. That was her name. Her, you know, Cassandra Webb, spelled with two B's. And she started going with the moniker Madame Webb. Now, first and foremost, she is a older character, right? She's not a young teeny bopper. She's not 20 something. She is a older woman. She was always portrayed that way. And she was a paraplegic, or paralyzed, you know, how she was. So we'll get into that. So when she made her first debut in issue number, I said, Amazing Spider-Man 210, Madame Web is a clairvoyant and a precognitive mutant. Pretty much, she can see things and the future. So futures. At first appeared in Spider-Man, that issue, to help Spider-Man find a kidnapped victim. And the thing is, she's a mutant.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, Spider-Man's trying to find a person and then gets called in and roped in by her and said, hey, Spider-Man can help you. So keep in mind, police do use psychics to help them find clues. And when it comes to cold cases or cases that are really tough and have come to a dead end, they have turned to psychics before to kind of get them back on the right path. Be it if you believe or not, this is what happens and it's for the greater good. That's the way it's supposed to be. So she comes in there. And that's what her storyline was about. So keep in mind, Madame Web, she's an older woman. She wears a long, like, burgundy robe that's over her feet with a spider emblem in white around her chest area. There we go. And then she has her eyes closed off. So you're not sure if she's, when you see her, is she blind or not? Her eyes are closed off. So it's almost like Destiny.
Destiny, yep. Yep, about to say, right? Destiny, yep.
From the X-Men, you know, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. You got Mystique, you got Destiny. There we go. So she always has a mask that covers her face. You never see her eyes. Destiny is blind, but because of her abilities, it's like Daredevil. She sees better than us. And I wear glasses. I'm wearing them today, but there we go. And this is how she comes about. So she makes her appearance in that one. The most memorable moment for me is later on is where Juggernaut shows up. There's an issue of Spider-Man. I'll find it. I'll put it up. And, you know, Spider-Man is literally fighting Juggernaut. Juggernaut's just walking through a building. And Madame Web is asking Spider-Man to help out stop a certain situation. And when he gets in there to stop it, sure enough, the Juggernaut's there. And him and the Juggernaut go in a one-on-one through New York City. And he's just fighting and trying to keep Madame Web alive. So that's another piece I'll say. Is Madame Web, when you get into her apartment, she's wired in. So she's sitting on this big cushion thing, and these wires all look like webs, but these bring to her vital fluids, keep her bodily functions going, and keeping her alive, basically. But the rest of her, she's an enigma. She's a mystery. We don't know what happened. We just see her at this thing. There's no build up to how she got there. All right. So that's pretty much Madame Web in a nutshell. So this is a character, I'm surprised they did a movie, but this is the character they went with. And I've got theories. So Rod, does she, and you know, depending on it. So she's a, you know, clairvoyance, precognitive, and she has telepathy, you know, and she's very intelligent. She's got a gifted intelligence, right? So these are things that have come on down the line. Rod, what do you think? And what was your first, you know, memory thoughts of Madame Web comic book character?
So definitely that particular issue, yeah, definitely remembering that, you know, helping out Spider-Man in the early days of Spider-Man. Another place, you know, a lot of people do remember her is from the animated Spider-Man TV show. And that's during the their early version of the Spider-Verse type of scenario. That's another more prominent recollection of Madame Web. But definitely, yeah, she's having the ability of, you know, she's being clairvoyant, you know. So it gives that mystique that, again, she is blind. Her eyes are covered. We're given the impression that she's blind, but she can see, quote unquote, see you very well. She has the ability to be projecting, and she's able to project herself in astral form. So have the ability to say, to talk to multiple peoples in an astral plane. So that's another part of her abilities, part of her functionality as well. She's always been a very interesting individual. And to me, she was a seasoning to the Spider-Man lore, to the Spider-Man universe. Good to have, good to know that she's there. But her, you know, just having her there was great. I always wondered, you brought it. I was going to say along the same line, like when they said they're having a movie. Okay, we'll get into that. But I was like, interesting. We don't, you know, there's not a lot per se that she does outside of having those particular abilities. She comes in as an advisor, as a person who basically, if there's a problem or there's a situation, Spider-Man, the person you're looking for is over here, gives him type of riddles, type of conversation just to make him think. She's never always that direct, if I remember correctly. She was never that type of, when you're in a conversation with her, never that direct. So I'm like, okay, what are we getting from her to make a movie? But we'll get into that. But outside of that, I found her being a great add-on to the Spider-Man lore, to the Spider-Man universe. To me, that was great. So we're going to talk some more about her. What are you?
You know, and this is what it is. So when I first thought about the movie, I was like, I was weird. But let's get back to the character. So here's the character. So the character, as I said, she's got her abilities. She's a mutant. She's older. So as I said, yes. So she's paralyzed. She's blind. She's telepathic, clairvoyant, precognitive, mutant. And she's working as a professional medium. So this is how she makes her money. He was stricken with, and forgive my pronunciation, myasthenia Graves. Like, it's a disease, right? It's a neuromuscular junction disease that leads to varying degrees of skeletal muscular muscle weakness. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was what is stricken her. So, I mean, you know, every hero always has to have a weakness to some degree. That's how they always wrote it. Or else it should be like uber strong. All right. Right. Got that. I was cool with that. So they brought in the first one where she had to help with a kidnapping, where the person that was doing the kidnapping was, you know, who was reporting the kidnapping was actually the kidnapper and was faking it, right? That was KG Clayton. So she was actually impersonating this. That was a whole story where she comes about. The second one, the one I really enjoyed, was Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut, right? And with that, it was issue 229 and 230 of The Amazing Spider-Man. That cover was just imposing. You got Spider-Man holding, you know, rubble holding Madame Web. She looks like she's dying. Juggernaut's there in the background, but it's just like a shadow of him, you know, with the words, nothing can stop the Juggernaut. So in that story arc, Black Tom Cassidy realizes Cassandra's powers, how they might be beneficial, because he's a pure mercenary, right? Black Tom Cassidy turns around, who is the cousin of Banshee from the X-Men. But he works with Juggernaut, right? Who's the stepbrother of Charles Xavier, to say, hey, go and kidnap her. Let's get a clairvoyant person on our side to help us with schemes and plans that we want to do so we can pull these off more successfully. So he sends the Juggernaut, and literally the Juggernaut just walks over. Wherever their base was, he walks undersea, walks up on shore, walks through Manhattan. And if you want to know about the Juggernaut, you got to go back to our season one episode, year one, I should say. We talked about the Juggernaut. You know, shout out, that is Sean's favorite episode. So there we go. And he gets there, and then she calls Spider-Man because she realizes with her visions that, you know, Black Tom Cassidy wants to kidnap her. And he sent the Juggernaut. Literally nothing stops Juggernaut. Spider-Man gets there, does his best, and And at one point, you know, the Juggernaut pulls her out of her chair. But as we said before, that is what's keeping her alive. Juggernaut is not aware of this, that disconnecting her from her chair is causing her bodily functions to shut down one by one. So Spider-Man is a race against time to not just beat Juggernaut, but to save Madame Web, connect her to her chair, try to keep the property damage down with the Juggernaut. Good luck. And you know, still be the hero for everything there. Two issues. Awesome read. Awesome read. Love those two. To your point, yes, she did show up in the Amazing Spider-Man cartoon, you know, and they kind of did their own secret version of, like, you know, Secret Wars with Spider-Man, and she was a main part in that. And I thought that was really interesting. So here we are. She's, you know, in a Marvel universe, if you play the role-playing game, you have altered humans, which is what Spider-Man would be, because he was bitten by a radioactive spider and he got his powers externally. So in the books, he's classified, you know, if you've had to play the role-playing game, he's classified as an altered human. And he's helping out a mutant because she is a mutant. So I don't know if the plans were to test her that way and try to bring her into the mutant world with the X-Men, because she's never really participated. Even though she was a mutant, she never got into mutant affairs.
Right.
Okay. And here we go with that. So when I heard about the movie, I'm like, okay, how are we going to do this? Because, no. Oh, I see Madame Web. So, and I mean, we're not going to dance around it. Let's talk about it. Have I seen the movie? No, I'll be honest. No, I haven't. Did I have any interest of seeing the movie? And Rod gave me some crap on this one. No, I didn't. And I know this is a comic book show, but, you know, as fans, there's times there's things you want to see and things that you're like, okay. And I'm, and as you all could tell, I'm pretty much an open-minded person. I'm an easy critic at times. People are going to say, oh, you know, that comic book guy from The Simpsons hated it. Oh, I'll watch it. I'll enjoy it. I'll be along for the ride if you can really entice me.
Mm-hmm.
This one I put in the category of Catwoman. Catwoman with Halle Berry. Right? I saw the poster. I was good. The Catwoman Halle Berry one, not a knock on the actress. It's just how they did it, how they put it in there. It was separated from the Batman universe, so to speak. The best thing about that, I think I watched 5 minutes of that movie and I'm like, no, I'm good. I was good. As a young man, the poster was the best thing that came out of that movie. Halle Berry in ripped leather pants and a bra and a crisscross whip. All right, man. All right. Here we go.
That was it.
That's all I needed. Lot of mercy. All right, there we go. So, I know. So, this is where, yeah. So, when I saw the movie come out and I see who they casted for Madame Web, let's put it away. Did I watch Morbius? Yes, I did. Did I enjoy Morbius? Yeah, it was interesting. I see what Sony's, it's got their method about how they go about things. And I think how other studios, like Marvel Studios, has a plan. I feel sometimes, you know, Sony's just going to grab whatever it is, throw it to the wall and see what sticks. That's my feeling about it. This is something that did not stick. All right, here we go. Rod, what was your take about this?
So, you know what? I was the same way. I haven't rushed to watch it yet. Eventually, I'm going to watch it. I haven't rushed to watch it yet. Because, again, it didn't really pull me in. Because my mindset was, at least with any type of character, any type of movie, we don't know what the ending is going to be, you know, but at least you have an idea. Okay, there's a chance there's going to be some type of story. They're going to be able to create some type of arc that's going to be interesting and try to pull you in. As I said, Madame Web, to me, she's part of the Spider-Man lore, the Marvel Universe lore, but she's like seasoning. She's good to have. She's good to have. As a part of a someone else's arc. Yes. But her by herself as an arc, I couldn't really see what were you going to do with Madame Web to say, you can pull me in for the length of time. I'm not even going to give a number of the length of time, whatever the case would be. So seeing at the movie, we have three young ladies who is part of this mystique of what's happening and someone is hunting them down. Okay, great. To me, Again, I haven't watched it, but just those footers to me is like, I think you could have taken her out of the equation, left the main nemesis at him, basically, because really what it is just like a hunting, Kraven the Hunter type of storyline. The, you know, the alleged bad guy or the individual is hunting these other individuals. Storyline is very straight cut and dry. But I just couldn't see what her part was really in all of it. So it never intrigued me to watch it. But eventually I will watch it because, like I was telling Barry, that not only, you know, we're comic guys and, you know, we want to be part of the, you know, the world of giving our suggestion, our opinions on all these movies, but we got to at least watch it to have an opinion. So good or bad, did we lose, you know, am I going to lose how many hours of my life? I don't know. And that's just be honest. I'll just be honest with that.
Yeah.
But I want to see and just see, okay, what were they trying to do? Barry said a good point with Mobius. You can see what they're trying to do. Didn't you know, land, you know, didn't hit, you know, what's the saying? They didn't get the landing.
Yeah, they didn't stick the landing.
Didn't stick the landing. But you see what they're trying to do. I now have to watch it to see what were they trying to do. But
yeah,
one day we'll have a conversation on that. We'll do another one when we actually watch it. Barry and I will figure out a time. We're gonna watch it, and then we can do a proper review. But All that to say is, I think, you know, I think it could have. No, I'm honestly, I'm here really trying to be nice. Not trying to be nice, but I'm just being honest. I don't know what the movie could be about. I'm so confused on that sense. But hey, they put something together. To me, it could be a buildup, and it could be one of those things that, again, what Sony was trying to do, where they're trying to lead and build into something else, could be that. I have to see. Is it more pertaining to the three young ladies that's in it? Are we building into some type of spin-off with them? Could be. But introduce it with Madame Web? I gotta see. I know it just sounds like I'm just going around in circles, but I'm really trying to figure out what were their goal, what was their whole mission, what were they trying to accomplish to pull us in. So I gotta watch it at some point, but herself is great, but I don't know if I could see it I just couldn't see what they could have done for a full length of time. That's
I got
me.
Theories. You I got theories? A theory. I got a theory. Here we go.
Okay, go throw it out. Let's see.
All right. So here we go. So first and foremost, as I said, we know that I haven't watched the movie. Granted, I haven't watched the movie. I know they brought in other spider women in there who are existing characters within the Marvel universe, right? I know
that
Julie Carpenter is in there. She's a spider woman, or, you know, and she wears a black costume, who was supposed to be a little bit older, I guess, or maybe around the same age. And she gets called, you know, you see her first appearance in, if I got it right, in Secret Wars. She's the spider woman that you see in the Secret Wars maxi series that takes place on another planet with a Beyonder and all that. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Right.
And so here's how I would go about it, right? First and foremost, let's not turn this into a CW version of what they did with Gotham Knights. No, we step away from that. Let's keep Madame Web as Madame Web. She doesn't need to be a 20-something-year-old woman, right? She needs to be comic-accurate older woman. Give her the disabilities. Give her all of that. You need an actress that's going to be able to hold that character and keep that interest in there and use that as motivation. Now, to touch on it a little bit, I'll say this. They brought in the villain. So we all know that the villain in the Madame Web movie, or what we see in the sequel, the trailers and everything, is Ezekiel. So Ezekiel, Zeke Sims, right? He's an older gentleman, has very similar powers Peter Parker. He's just older. He got his powers, you know, through a ritual that he did. He didn't get bitten by a radioactive spider, but that his storyline when he comes into it. So, you know, he made his first appearance in The Amazing Spider-Man of, you know, issue number 33, July of 2001, right? And he was created by John Michael Straczynski and, once again, John Romita Jr. So John Romita Jr. was behind creating Ezekiel and behind creating Madame Web. Okay, keep Ezekiel in what I'm going to say. Let Ezekiel still take on that bad guy role. So how it comes in is Ezekiel comes in there and he starts talking. When he makes his appearance, he starts talking to Peter Parker. Like, Peter sees him. So he's an older gentleman. He wears a black suit, no tie. So it's a suit of class. He's barefoot, no hands, and he's able to run up walls, has similar powers to Spider-Man. And when Peter Parker, as Spider-Man, sees him, it's like, who are you? How do you have spider powers? Like, and Peter has so many questions. So Ezekiel starts to train him on this whole thing. And Ezekiel does show up in Spider-Man Across the Universe. He plays the spider therapist, right, in that, you know, Miles Morales movie. So anyways, I'm going with the original one. So let's go. Madam Web, older woman, comic accurate. Ezekiel, older gentleman, make him comic accurate. Ezekiel's whole purpose is he is explaining to Peter Parker that, aren't you wondering about your powers and the villains you fight? He goes, what do you mean? He goes, you're Spider-Man. You're fighting the Rhino, the Lizard, the Vulture. These are the guys that you end up fighting mostly. Green Goblin. Right? These are all either monsters or creatures of lore or animals that existed and people use them. Pretty much, your powers are totem-based. If you look in the grander scheme of things, you are taking on that totem. So it was a mystical aspect that he was bringing in and he was talking about.
Okay.
So keep everyone the way they are, and that's all the way I envision the movie. Bring in maybe one potential character, a Spider-Woman, and we've covered Spider-Woman on our show before.
Yep.
The original one, you're at Jessica Drew. All right. The very first Spider-Woman. So bring her in. I think that's all you would need, but bring her in a smaller role as a mentorship. Bring her in. Maybe it could have been a Spider-Woman movie with these two, Madam Web on one side, Ezekiel on the other side. They're like the little, you know, good side and bad side of your conscience, trying to train her and say, hey, by the way, do you not? So anyways, but the original story is he's talking about Spider-Man. We know we don't have Spider-Man in there, but Spider-Man is within the Sony universe. My whole thing is, let's go back to that whole totem thing. Let's talk about Anansi, who is the spider god that we see in Africa. If you watch those, the TV show, was it American Gods? Anansi is in there, played by, oh my gosh, I'm not gonna say I called the wrong guy there. Orlando Jones.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's played by Orlando Jones, right? And I'm not saying use that actor, but I'm just saying Anansi comes in, American Gods, whatever. So I know I'm going all over the place, but bear with me, it makes sense. So instead of Spider-Man just being radioactive spider, tight, bang, boom, classic comic book thing, now we're getting another layer of the heroes, the villains that he fights, because they're all totem-based. Therefore, it's showing that gods are somewhat influencing people, because every god wants to have an avatar on Earth to represent them. Nancy, the spider god, is the trickster god. So Ezekiel is trying to, first he sees Spider-Man in the comic books, and he's like, oh, wow, I have a successful business. I didn't really use my powers to make people's lives better. He gets jealous of Peter Parker using his powers to be a hero, where he has the same powers and he didn't do that. He just built up his business. And when he sees how Peter uses his powers, he gets jealous. So he starts to kind of train Peter, wants to open Peter up to being, you know, the spider god. You're the avatar for the spider god, so to speak. Takes Peter over, I can't remember if it was like Cuba, Peru, or something like that, to go looking for this lost temple. It's almost like an Indiana Jones feel kind to it. To find out at the end that Ezekiel just wanted to get to the temple and he needed to sacrifice the avatar to get like eternal life. Okay. So that's basically the story is in the comic book. I don't know if that's what it is in the movie, but that's his overall goal, is to get eternal life or get young again, whatever. And to do it, he has to sacrifice someone with a similar power to do it. You got to sacrifice the avatar to get the avatars. You know, the God's blessing, yada, yada, yada. This is where Madam Web comes in. With her ability, she could be a mutant, but maybe she deals with a little bit of mysticism at the same time. Maybe not to the level of Doctor Strange, but maybe she's aware of this whole totem. She's done research. I mean, she's home. She's got powers. Certain things might pop up. Even if it's not even magical, she will still get certain information pop up. She might have like a feeling of, oh, geez, I see this person's trying to bring this god to life. Now, is it a bigger than life story? Absolutely. But this is what comic books are about, and this is Marvel. and she needs to stop him. Now, physically, she can't stop him because she can't leave her apartment. So first of all, I'm not putting her in an apartment. I'm going to make her Madam Web, age appropriate, in a condo. Let her be a successful medium. Let her turn around and make money off of this to pay for her life support, but live in a nice lifestyle, right? So she's living in a high-class condo with high-tech stuff around.
Right.
And then she's got to deal with Ezekiel at the same time because she's getting flashes of what his plan's going to be, and she needs to have a set of legs. That set of legs, if they want it to be, you're not going to get Peter Parker. I understand that. But you put in Spider-Woman. Give me the first Spider-Woman. Let the first Spider-Woman come Jessica. In there. Jessica. And let her try to get to Jessica. So keep in mind, the only way for her to get to Jessica is through telepathy.
Yep.
But at the same time, Jessica can be at a cafe and you hear a voice in your head. If you're a normal person walking down the street and you hear a voice in your head, the first thing you want to do is check yourself into the hospital.
What the what? Yeah.
Right? And she's going to say, well, I'm Madam Web. You don't see those commercials that come on sometimes. You know your future, whatever. I'm Madam Web. And it's like, I thought you were just a charlatan. I thought you were just fake. And then all of a sudden, in that same cafe, some guy walks in there, sees her, and starts flipping over tables trying to get to her. And she's like, all right, you got to run. Turn left here. Turn right. Jump over this building. Come here. Turn here. All right. It's like, you're at the entrance of this door. It's got a P code on it. All right. The numbers are, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4. Type them in. Open the door. Boop, boop. Close the door behind you, take the elevator, put this code in, go to my penthouse. I am Madam Web. I'm what? You got to stop Ezekiel. You know, you're still coming into your powers. It could be year one Spider-Woman. You're coming into your powers. I'm going to help you. We're going to work together because I have the knowledge. You have the brawn. We need to stop him from, you know, because bottom line is he wants to sacrifice you. Right? And then and Ezekiel's like, no, I'm not trying to sacrifice you. Madam Web is the one who's nefarious. I just want to help you. You know what I mean? So play that moral compass. It's like, how would you do your powers? He's trying to woo her because he needs her as a sacrifice. Madam Web needs her to fight. Maybe they don't fully give her all the information. So it makes it look like either one is shady and she has to make a decision until the big reveal at the end. And it's a big, of course, classic fight of the new Spider-Woman fighting Ezekiel. Mm. Still within the Spider-Man universe because it's still part of Sony. Right? That to me is the movie. I don't need four Spider-Women. I need Madam Web. I need Ezekiel. I need one Spider-Woman. Even if you don't want to go with Jessica, you can still go with the other Spider-Woman that showed up in the black and white costume in Secret Wars. Because that's her granddaughter, like down the road, whatever. So bring in that Spider-Woman. So either or, we're good. We don't need that many players in there. We need three. It could still be billed as a Madam Web movie, and she's maybe training her granddaughter to take on certain roles to later spin off into her own movie. But that would still be a good way. And then you have Madam Web as that focal point within that universe to help out. Because, hey, guess what? You need to go across the world to chase this guy down? Don't worry about it. I got money. I'll put you on my private plane. You got a private plane? Well, yeah, I got to travel, but I got to travel with all this stuff to keep me alive. So it's more, you know, getting around.
Right. So I like where you're going because you're definitely digging into, or you're pulling at least from the original character because, as I stated, Madam Web is the grandmother of the fourth Spider-Woman, Charlotte Witter. So we can get into that, but at least you're now intertwining that. She could actually be a mentor. She's training an up and coming Spider-Woman. Now, you brought a good point in regards to making her a medium who's a successful medium. Don't you know who I am? I'm Madam Wen, or AKA, you know me as my handle, Miss Cleo.
Shots fired.
And everybody thinks she's a charlatan and she ain't real. But she's actually real in the sense that she's actually good. Her predictions and everything is on point. Hence the reason why I have the ability to create an empire that gives me the ability to stay alive, to sustain what I need to and be able to, like you said, I need, you know, access, private access, flight access to go wherever I need to go because sometimes I need to make an appearance. But now she realized she's getting too old and this is where she's starting to basically train her granddaughter or, like you said, either a granddaughter or in a sense, Jessica, giving her the understanding, like, listen, you have potential. There's something within you. You just don't know it yet. I can see the future. I see you in your uniform. You got skills. Let's talk. So, yeah,
thank you.
I can go with that. I can go with that.
See, that's the storyline I would have gone with, right? Because then it keeps it simple. It makes it exciting. And then you establish just how Samuel Jackson was established as Nick Fury to hold the Marvel Cinematic Universe together because 100%. He shows up in each one. We can 100%. Now have a focal point in Madam Web to hold the Spider-Verse together for 100%. Sony. Right? 100%. And it goes also back with totems because now you can play a little bit more with the totem aspect and add a little bit of mysticism to it. So keep in mind, Kraven Hunter, what does he wear? He wears a lion vest. Morbius, he's a vampire. He's a living vampire, right? So this gets into that aspect. And I think the writing in itself would have evolved in its own way. Even Venom. Even though Venom has the symbiote costume, he's a parasite.
Okay,
so he's a parasite in the Spider-Universe. So
I see it.
By the time, if Sony really wanted to and said, we want to do our own movie, or we want to do a Spider-Man, let's say MCU movie, but guys, we want to do it fully Spider-Man, what are you going to call it? We can do a live-action Spider-Man movie, a live-action Spider-Verse movie. And because Madame Web would be there, then let's say you bring in a Spider-Woman who's working with Madame Web. Peter Parker's not going to know who Madame Web is, but he might hear the exploits of this new Spider-Woman, so he's going to be curious who she is. And when he comes across her, it's like, oh, well, I work with Madame Web. You mean that charlatan on TV that tells people's futures? Yeah, she comes across that way, but she's real. She's so real that she makes herself fake, so no one bothers her, but she's real.
100%.
Right? Like, it's like you have a disguise behind a disguise to be the real you. Okay. Right. All right. And by the way, she's got a budget, and we need you. But
she got a budget.
We got a budget because there that she can help with two storylines. That whole totem storyline, which I thought was a great original way to take it and to bring Spider-Man's villains together, it writes itself. And of course, you can do the whole, hey, here's the Sinister Six. Who's in the Sinister Six? Well, that's Mysterio. Okay.
Yep.
Doc Octopus. Oh, wait a minute.
Yep.
Octopus? Doc Ock? Yep. Okay, that's totem. Raven, totem, Sandman, sand. Okay, you're the totem of sand? Sure, why not? Okay, yep. Venom,
Ultra.
You're the, okay, yep. Parasite, okay. Yep. Ultra, okay, we can keep Electro. All right, you're representing electricity. Okay, so they're all there and more. I know there's more than those who I've mentioned in the Sinister Six. It's always like a revolving door, Green Goblin.
Yeah.
But you bring in the Sinister Six, and then Madame Web is like, Peter, you can't fight these characters on your own. I'm sending over some help. And she's going to send over Spider-Woman. And it's like, hey, Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, who do we need help? Oh, no, guess what? Morales makes his live MCU appearance, appearance. Send over Miles Morales. Oh, snap. Send over, Spider-Gwen. Oh, snap. Like, these are people that would come over and help Peter Parker.
100%.
And within the spider world, right? So it's spiders. You find out they're spiders. Totem is somewhat a trickster guardian against these other totems that are trying to take over for whatever reason. Okay? And if you want to really go for the gusto, everything can be said and done and said, hey, I guess we took care of it. This is a, hey, what? Hold on. Who's walking through the town? Who's walking through the town? Juggernaut? And literally, you could do a cut scene where you have Juggernaut on the street. And he's like, move, you bums. I'm here for Madam Web, right?
Yep.
And bring in the live appearance of Black Tom Cassidy in front of Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Miles Morales, all three of them standing there going, you're not getting past us. And then, because you know what that tells you? That tells you right away that if Juggernaut's there, who's an altered human, that Black Tom Cassidy is there, who is a mutant and cousin of Banshee from the X-Men.
Right.
Which means if he's there, Banshee exists. Which means if mutants are there and mutants are there, mutants exist within the universe. Now, I understand this is Sony, so Sony's got to work with Marvel. But you just made another revelation, Easter egg of mutants are there, and you're going to issue, you know, Amazing Spider-Man of 229, 230.
Yep.
Nothing stops the juggernaut. Now, you don't even have to do an episode. You can just do it as a post-credit scene and let it be there and let it sit with our imaginations and then watch message boards explode on what it could have been. Sony, that was your movie. You had one job, Sony. That was your movie. That was exactly your movie. That was it. You could have started off, you could have had Madame Web, as I said, with Ezekiel and a Spider-Woman in there. You could have done a part two where you finally bring in those characters to team up, because you don't need five movies, two movies. One to establish, second movie with Peter in there, fighting the Sinister Six. Okay, we're good. Post-credit scene, Juggernaut. You know, the casual fan might be like, well, why is Juggernaut in here? Any reader will say, oh, and then issues 229 and 230 go start flying off the shelves. Now, is it different from the storyline? Yes. I'm going with the confines of what they've presented to us in the live action Sony-verse and MCU universe and not the true story. So I understand that. So this is why certain characters will be meeting outside of what the true story is. But there is that's my theory on that.
And then, you know what? It's a good add-on, because I know I saw a clip where they were interviewing or just having a quick discussion outside. Actually, I believe it was during this movie. Mm-hmm. Producers and Sony side were saying, someone's asking, when is Miles coming up? Well, we got two movies. We're going to work on two movies before we start thinking about introducing Miles. So this would be perfect. Like you said, you do all this, put these two in, and then you slip in a Miles Morales later on. This would be a good handoff. Lateral move, like rugby. Lateral move, like football. Let's go.
Absolutely. And you keep Madame Web in there as the Nick Fury role, right? You keep Madame Web in there as sense. To bring everybody together when needs be. You know, she's like the Spider-Verse version of Charles Xavier. This is who Madame Web should be. I don't know, you know, so Sony, it's like right now we're going to do Kraven and we're going to do Morbius and we're going to do Madame Web but there's nothing that's really tying these movies together.
Yeah.
I watched Morbius and I don't see how Morbius is going to be tying into Kraven. Right? You know, you see, I don't see how that would tie into a Vulture movie. You know, Marvel has it, like, it's all going to intertwine at one point, so they drop their Easter eggs, and you can always go back and watch them and say, got it. Sony is just like, we're going to do everything else in the Spider-Verse because we have the rights for it, and we don't want to lose the rights, so we're just going to make a movie. Well, if you're going to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars, invest it in something that's going to potentially pay off. And the way that would pay off is, in my opinion, first and foremost, you're going to get a decent movie. Better than what they got. Two, you're going to increase the comic sales for those books of those first appearances, of those important storylines for characters. They're going to do a Madame Web omnibus. Okay, there you go. The important moments we have to know about Madame Web.
Right.
And all right, let's go into some toy figures. There's no per se Madame Web statue or toy figure out there that I know of. Now you're going to get that. That's going to increase sales. Come on, Sony. Come on. You should have hired us from the Iconist podcast to turn around and give you an outline for how this movie should have been.
It's not too late.
We would have got, you know, Jessica Drew in there. We would have gotten either one of the Spider-Women, like one of the true Spider-Women in there that would have helped into this. Right? Okay, maybe go back and look at Bart Sears when he was doing Spider-Woman, writing and drawing that book at one point. You know, reach back out to John Romero Jr. He clearly created both characters, Ezekiel and Madame Web. He's got theories.
He may have an idea. He may be able to put something together. No, but that's exactly it. That's not a bad idea, because giving this layer, and this is the scenario, like you're saying, it's like Sony just putting stuff to see what sticks. And what honestly, it just hurts me when I see potential opportunities like this should be made, and they're just doing it more like a one-off. It's like, roll the dice. Let's see if something stick, but don't even plan like, no, okay, we're going to do something after. That's why I'm like saying, I haven't seen this movie yet. I would like to see what are they trying to stick. What are they trying to pull out of it? Because in the interim, it's not really giving me anything. And I'm like, I'm not saying let me put it this way. I know that all viewers try to mentally forecast what the movie's going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're going to look into it. I'm like, okay, it could go here, it can go here, it can go here, it can go here, it can go here. Type of scenario. And have their own theory, have their own fan cast, and have perfect. But if you're trying to bring something together and no one can really think of, I can't even think past the first hour of this movie? Half hour? When it finished? Where are we going from here? That's it. Like watching the trailers and just hearing, trying to figure out what the storyline is. It's like, okay, it just seems so independent, so standalone. It's like this is just an individual standalone movie where you're. It's like we're reading on, like if someone trying to make an adaptation of a novel, and you know that book actually has no trilogy, it has no continuation. I can understand that.
Mm.
You said it before, source material. You know there's some type of connection somewhere. Why are you not giving that? You may have that plan. May have that plan.
Maybe. But
right off the bat, people should be able to sit, look at that, and already mention like, wow, if you're bringing Madame Web in, we know the scenario with Spider-Man, so we know that most likely won't happen. Fine. There got to be something else. Someone else should be saying like this, should be able to think, you know what, let's make some type of connection. Let's create some type of multiverse idea out of here and go from there.
Right.
Look, I kind of podcast.
I'm going to even go a half a step deeper.
You're already here.
I'm here. So, you know, the Ezekiel is going to find this temple. He explains the whole totem thing, how totems are the behind, you know, giving the people their powers. They find, I had to research real quick. So they go, I thought it was Peru or Cuba, something like that. No, they go to Africa. He goes to Africa. In Africa, he's fighting Morlin, right? Morlin is a vampire. So this is now, okay, instead of Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, it could be Spider-Woman. And guess what? She's got it going. Who's a vampire that came out already? Morbius. So now she's got to find Morbius to join them, get to Africa to start this whole thing. That's how you bring Morbius. Morbius doesn't even have to be in the whole movie. He just has to find where he's at and says, hey, I need your help kind of thing, blah, 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 blah. You know, they have their superhero fight. She convinces him because Morbius in the movie was not a villain per se. Right?
Mm-hmm.
He was just trying to figure it out and trying to fight and survive. So he's like an anti-hero. And then he fought someone who stole his powers, was trying to be a villain, the other guy, and he fought him. So, right. So Morbius is just out there. To the public, he's perceived as a villain. But that's a connection right there.
How do you
fight a vampire? By getting a living vampire. You've got a vampire totem? Well, we got a living vampire. Hey, Morbius, I need you to deal with him, and I'll deal with Ezekiel. Yo, that opens up the whole world to being intertwined and connected. Oh my gosh. Okay. Like, come on now. Come on. And this is like when I say The Amazing Spider-Man with Ezekiel, and I was giving the numbers. I know it sounded low. So this is volume two because, you know, they ran to, you know, so Madam Web made her appearance in volume one. They did Amazing Spider-Man volume two. So this is where, you know, for example, Morlin, he shows up in issue number 30. Okay. Come on now. Mm-hmm. Come on now. I'm telling you right now, if anyone's out there, I'm just throwing things out there. But tell me, this doesn't sound more interesting than what we saw. If you've seen Madam Web, tell me if you think my idea is better than the Madam Web movie. Or tell me if you think this would be a lot more interesting than what you've seen, or even in the trailers if you haven't seen it. And this is what I'm proposing out to people out there. So that's my whole thing. So now, this is why I wanted to talk about Madam Web, because I figured, like you said, Rod, missed opportunity. And Ezekiel is supposed to be in his 50s. This is why I say, don't CW me, man. Don't CW me. Don't give me someone who's supposed to be in their 50s and make them 20. Don't give me someone who's supposed to be in their 60s and make them 20. All right? No. It's not how we came, Madam Web. It's Madam Web. Even if you're showing the origin, like her origins. Anyway, so that's my two cents. So, if that was the case, and I'm going to fan cast it my way.
Mm-hmm.
Here, we're going to get down to this point. So we've talked the origin of Madam Web. I know it didn't seem much, but we got to put some meat on that bone. talked about the movie, and now we'll fan cast it. So if we had a fan cast it traditionally, I'm looking for someone, and we're just talking Madame Web. I'm looking for someone to play Madame Web that's maybe closer, age appropriate, who can steal a scene without leaving a chair, has some kind of, you know, delivery. It's got to be impeccable. Someone that you're going to look at and say, okay, I can see this actress playing Madame Web. I'm interested to see how she does it. And, you know, the actors that are really able to steal a scene, as I said, without leaving a chair.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it really simple. There's only one person that can do this in my mind.
Who's that?
And for me, that is Jamie Lee Curtis. Jamie Lee Curtis should have been Madame Web. Right? Okay. If you watched her last couple of movies, I can't remember the name of it now, that she did with Michelle Yeoh. Where, you know, at one point she's at different universes. She's got the hot dog fingers.
Yes, 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 yes. All at once. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Right. So that movie. Now, in that movie, is she trying to play a sex symbol?
No.
She's not playing the role like she did in True Lies. She's not a sex symbol. You know, she's an annoying boss. But she delivered it with some good heartfelt moments. She delivered it with humor. There was action in the movie. Jamie Lee Curtis is it. Jamie Lee Curtis as Madame Web, you would watch her on screen and go, okay, she holds my interest. She's holding my interest. She can sit there and deliver her lines. And you look, even that movie that she did with Michelle Yeoh, right? That she's in a chair at one point, sitting down, just talking. And you're like, oh, I'm all in. Dialogue was good. Jamie Lee Curtis delivered it beautifully. That's who I would go with as Madame Web, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, Jamie Lee Curtis had that whimsical smile. So at one point, she can play the charlatan. She can play the tough woman on top of it, too. She can play a person that's struggling because she had to deal with her brother trying to kill her off in every Halloween movie.
Okay, we could definitely say that too.
Right? So she's got that range that, come on now, Jamie Lee Curtis, come on. You.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's good. That's good. That's good. Now, you brought a point. I didn't properly articulate it in my head, but you said a good point. Someone who could basically act from a chair. That's what I took from you. Someone who can just basically sit there and get your attention. And that's what I wanted. So, for my Madame Web, I was definitely going, like you said, a little bit age appropriate and everything like that. Now, my selection, she's a little bit older. Mm-hmm. She's a little bit older, but she does have the chops. I would like to have Helen Mirren as mine. Now, who is that? We're just going to go a couple places. You would know her. The last latest one was Shazam, A Fury of the Gods, Hesperia. But you will know her more as Queenie from the Fast and Furious. Basically, that's Shaw's mother. Also, if you go with why? Oh my gosh, where was the other one? Hold on, I literally.
I'll even help you out on this one. Because we found that I'll help you out. Helen Mirren.
Red. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Red 2. She plays the sniper in there. I'll even go way back to the beginning of her career, which is one of my favorite medieval movies, fantasy movies. It's called Excalibur. If you watch the first Excalibur movie from back in the days, back in the 80s, where they had the shiny armor talking about King Arthur and everything like that, Helen Mirren plays Morgan Le Fay in that movie. And she is absolutely phenomenal. Dead gorgeous and phenomenal. Okay. And I was like, I have that movie on DVD. That's like my favorite. You talk about movies. That's like for fantasy and along those lines with King Arthur. Mm-hmm. No movie has beat that movie, in my opinion. Forget all the other King Arthur movies that came out. Nothing has touched that one yet. Costume wise and Helen Mirren in that movie. Amazing. And Red, amazing. Fast and Furious, amazing. Touche, sir. Ooh, shit.
Cause listen, cause even then, like, she's in the queen and everything like that. So I wanted someone who basically has that. Cause at least in the cartoon, she's not snobby, but she's very proud. She's very sure of herself. I want someone who can talk to you and just basically feel no way to put you in your place. I can't see you, but I have enough gumption, enough arrogance to say, no, I'm the top dog here. I'm the top person here. I am Madam Web. Respect my authority. Listen, I just want someone just to sit there and basically she just will radiate authority and not even just, you know, you can't see her eyes, but you know, like, I need to toe the line because the next thing I say, I may lose my life after that. That's the type of vision I have with her. So, yeah.
All right. I like that. I see Helen Mirren, you know, yeah. Helen Mirren. And as I said, I was going Jamie Lee Curtis. Those are two actresses right there that
100%.
Would play the heck out of Madame Web. And could I see either actress in a Spider-Man movie making a cameo appearance later on? The answer is yes.
100%.
Absolutely. Come on now. Come on, Sony. Sony! All right, then. So that's what we wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about Madam Web and just bring that to light. And of course, people like calling it the problems of, oh, I don't like it, I don't like it, I don't like it. We wanted to go beyond and say, hey, we have a solution. Here's our pick. This is how it could have been. Not too late to kind of maybe rejig some things. Nothing wrong with a reboot on this one. I don't like reboots, but this one, yeah, you got to do the reboot. Okay, so there you go. Rod, any last words?
Listen, all I can say is, this character is interesting. I hope that you like the little different perspective that we brought to it. And I really feel that, you know, what Barry is saying, what I've added on and everything like that, that this will actually be a valid IP to actually be seen. And where you say, okay, we can give her a chance. And basically making her to be the linchpin throughout the Spider universe, to me, it makes sense. To me, it makes sense. I'll leave it at that.
Ooh, what a tangled web we weave.
Woohoo!
That is awesome. So once again, everyone, thank you for tuning in. This has been the Iconist Podcast. As we were saying, we're talking about Madam Web, but not only did we identify, first we talked about the origin of the story. We talked about maybe what we wanted to see and kind of pitch our own ideas on how the movie could have been in our opinion. Too late, Sony. As I said, you know, so Rod, you went with Helen Mirren. I went with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis, yep.
Let us know who you would think could play a proper Madam Web in a proper Madam Web storyline in a live action series. Maybe you have a different take to ours that's maybe better than ours. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Let us know in the comments below. Remember, like, subscribe, and share. This is the Iconist Podcast. And as I always say, this whole world was started by a pencil, a piece of paper, and lots of imagination. Keep on dreaming. Out.
Spider-Man. Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Rod, we need a remit.
Okay, I'll work on it.
All right. Enough said. We out.
We out.